Okay, good morning. So we are going to be taking a look at a document which you hear read all the time, and which, the truth be told, there's somebody standing up there rattling off, and most people have no idea what's really being said in what is one of the most fundamental documents of Jewish life, which really everybody should know what it is, because it defines our obligations in many ways. In order to understand this, we should start by going to the back page of the handout. I actually asked a speaker once why he put the sources in opposite order of the ones of the shiur. And I suggested to him that the reason must be so that way nobody can get your handout and give you shiur. Now, we have to take a quick look at what the Rambam tells us about the obligations of the husband to the wife and the wife to the husband. Because without this, we're not going to be successful in understanding what the ketubah is about, because that's what it's all based on. So we're going to go through this very quickly. Halacha Aleph, kishinose adam isha bein betula bein be'ula bein gedola bein ketana. If a man marries basically any type of woman that you can possibly think about, that he's allowed to marry, right? Achat bat yisrov achat agyorin, she's originally a Jew, or she converted to Judaism. Homeshuchreret, she was a slave and she was freed. Yitchayev la ba'asara dvarim v'yizkimar ba'dvarim. So he is going to have 10 obligations, and he's going to get 4 things in return. So we already see who has the advantage. Now, halacha bet, vasara, what are the 10 things that the man is obligated to his wife? So he says, shlosha me'en min haTorah. There are 3 min haTorah, ve'elu hein she'rak sutavon ata. These are the 3 things, namely food, clothing, and sexual relations. She'era elu mizonoteha. The she'er is the food. Ksuta, kemishma, it means, what do you think it means? Her clothing. Onata, relations. Lavo alea kadera kol aretz. To have relations, that's the way of, you'll see that's in the ketubah. Lume'u me'al levataychi. Ka'orach kol ara. Ka'orach kol ara means, as is the way of the world. So he has to guarantee that to her. And then, vashiva, 7 of the things are not min haTorah. They're midivrei sofrim. They're rabbinic. All of them are conditions of the Beit Din. Now, we're going to be coming back to this later on. But Tanai Beit Din means that whether or not it's written in the ketubah or not, the husband is obligated. A number of things, like freeing your wife if she gets captured, taking care of her medically, are Tanai Beit Din that are no longer written in the ketubah, but were written in the ketubah in the Palestinian ketubah that are found in the Cairo Geniza. And in the ketubah of Babata, who was a famous woman who went to a cave during the Bar Kokhba revolt, whose documents we have, according to her ketubah, you will see that, and we're going to look at it later on, all these conditions used to be written down. They're no longer written, but they're still obligatory. So what are they? Ha'echad me'an ikar ketubah. The first one is the ikar ketubah. Now, ikar ketubah is the 200 zuz which the husband promises to give the wife in the event that the marriage ends in divorce or his death. So there is a major argument whether the ketubah, meaning this money guarantee, what we could call alimony, but it's not really, because alimony for us is only divorce, this is death or divorce. So in any case, whether or not this is min haTorah or not, Rabbeinu Tam holds it's min haTorah. Everybody else that you could possibly think about, the Rambam, you see it right here, the Rif, right, the Rashba, the Ritva, everyone holds that it is not min haTorah, but you know it says in the ketubah, we'll come back to it in a few minutes, it says, b'chazi lichi midoraita. There it says that it is min haTorah in the ketubah. So we'll discuss that. But the Rambam says the ikar haketubah is the first thing. Vashar, hey, money, queen, tonight, ketubah, the rest of the conditions of the ketubah, the Elohim. L'rapotam chaltah to heal her if she got sick. U'lithotam the state to free her if she got captured. U'likavarak the shetamut to bury her when she dies. Really, he owed me zonet midichasav that she's supported from his property, Yoshev and Beko, and lives in his house. Achar moto, even after he dies, calls man alman uta as long as she is a widow. Really, he owed benoteh abi ben unizonot midichasav that his daughter, her daughters, should be supported if she dies, acharemo, even after he dies. As a matter of fact, I said it wrong. They should be supported from his property after he dies, achi tasu, until they are betrothed. That's called benan nugban, which means female daughters. V'liyot baneha azcharim imenu yoshim, and the male sons that she has from him should inherit the ketubatah and more than the regular inheritance. Let me explain what that is. That is like this. We have this woman gets married, and there's a ketubah. That's the money that the husband promises to give her in the event of death or divorce, right? There is also money that maybe she brought into the marriage in the nidunya. Among the nidunya funds or assets, there is a type called nichsei tzon barzel. In fact, the whole nidunya is nichsei tzon barzel, unless it's specified otherwise. That means that it goes back to her no matter what. Now imagine the father-in-law contributed that, and now the woman passes away, and we all know these stories from families, and somehow before you know it, a whole other family inherited the money. Because why? Let's say there was one child from the first wife, she passed away, now the man married somebody else and he has six children. Now if they just divide the inheritance, the ketubah of wife number one doesn't go to her one child, it goes to the other children. In order to avoid that, you have the Tanai of what we call Benin Dichrin, of the male sons. And that's what he's talking about here. We'll come back to it in a few minutes later on this year. The Arbach Zochabahem, one of the four things that the husband gets, Kulam Yidivrei Sofer, and you're also rabbinic. Veiluhem, Liyot Masi Yadei Shalom, whatever she makes is his. Viliyot Mitziyuta Shalom, if she Mitziyata Shalom, if she finds something, it's his. He's allowed to use for the tzon barzel, the property that's in her name. Like, let's say stock, it's in her name. She comes to the marriage and there's a stock with her name on it. He gets, so to speak, to use the profit of that. Right? The inmate of Bechayav Yerushan, and he inherits her if she dies. And he comes first. Now, besides this, there are some other things here, but go down to Halacha Hay at the bottom. Even if they're not written in the contract, even if there was none, which of course is forbidden according to Allah, but if it happens, even if he married her the ketubah, once he marries her, he's entitled to get these four things. And the woman's entitled to the 10 things. It doesn't matter whether you explained them or you didn't explain them, they're your obligation. So a husband today, regular Ashkenazi husband, whose wife gets captured by some kidnapper, can't turn around and say, I couldn't care less, not my obligation. After all, it doesn't say something in Ketubah, because it's Tanai baked in. Okay. Now with this introduction, we're going to start looking at the actual document on page 2. Now I also gave you on page 2 this beautiful commentary by Rabbi Maurice Lamb, in which he gives a full outline of what these different clauses are and what they mean, and a wonderful commentary. You can read it at home, but if you get lost, look, if you don't understand what I'm saying, you can take a quick look. It'll reorient you. It's very good. It's a very, very good thing. They complained a little, you know, what do you have such a long handout? But I said, I really want everyone to take that home. It's a really worthwhile thing. Now, the first thing that happens in a ketubah, the so-and-so, the Shabbat, on such and such a date, on such and such a month, right, in the year so-and-so, so why do we, Libriyata Olam, that's the way we do it, right? According to creation, Leminis Anamodim Khan, according to the, normally, the way we count. So why do we need a date in the ketubah? Who cares? The answer is as follows. The Ikar ketubah is an obligation. Now let's understand something. As far as we can gather, the original ketubah was an actual payment, similar to the mohar in the Torah. Now we know the mohar in the Torah because it's specified in the case of a person who seduces a girl and then has to pay mohar and marry her. However, apparently mohar was a regular part. Mohar is the bride price. Now, what happens is that the bride price ceases to be a real payment. And what happens over time is, and clearly by the time of Shimon ben Shetach, who is credited with formalizing this, the thing had become not a real payment, but acceptance of an obligation. That obligation of this amount of money is only due in the event the marriage ends in death or divorce. Now, this particular thing, here we have what it says here in the Tosefta, Barishona Kishahaita, you don't have this. Barishona Kishahaita Ketubah Taitzalaviha, when the ketubah was originally with the father, that means the money was given when the guy married the woman, he gave this money to her father, it was sitting there. So what happened? I got mad at her. He said, go home, take your ketubah money, don't bother me. So Hitkin Shimon and Shetach, Shimon and Shetach came over and made a takana. Shetahei ketubah ta'itzel ba'ala. That the guy doesn't have the money, the husband has it in his pocket. In other words, ladies, every one of you who is married, your husband made an obligation to you. He has the money in his pocket. You don't have the money. Your father doesn't have the money. Right? He's got an obligation, but he's got the money. So therefore, v'chotev la, this is the big ikar of the thing that he did. He should write for her, call nichsin the itai li, any property which I have, this is in the ketubah. Achra'inim arvin, v'chtuf tich da. They are all mortgaged and serve as guarantees for this money. So the big chiddush of Shimon ben Shetach was that, no, you don't have to give the mohar. You take the mohar and you turn it into a potential obligation, which the man holds the money himself, so he could use it for the family, he can invest now. I read an article by a moderate feminist, I admit forgetting the name, in Nashim, in which she discusses this whole question, and she points out that there are two systems for getting married in society. One is where there is a bride price paid, the man buys the wife. This was certainly the case in the ancient Near East. The other system is the Nadunya, which we're going to come to soon, that the woman pays the dowry and buys, so to speak, the right to be married to this man. Look what the Jews did. And they're saying, this is coming not from me, this is from the moderate feminist. The Jews put the two together and said, it's the man and the woman, as it says in the Ketubah, Shav Hashem and Nichseon, equal in the property. They put them together. So by putting them together, we do both. But then we took the man's bride price and we whittled down the part of it being literally paid. And it's not paid, it's just promised and mortgaged. And that's what the ketubah is as we have it today. To mortgage what used to be the bride price, which is no longer a bride price. We have to call the questions to the end. Hold the mic. I'll go try like this. Is that better? Maybe we should get rid of it. How's this? Is it better than the microphone? No? Amazing. This must not be very good. Okay. So we'll try it like this, okay? Now, that's better? You can hear like that? Okay. Some people are going to raise their hand a minute and say it's too loud. I can see it. Okay. Now, promise to be here an hour. Okay. 2 hours more. Okay. So the reason that now, so we still didn't explain to you, why did the date? It's simple. The minute you have a mortgage going on, we have to decide who's the first lien holder. In other words, if I said that all my property is mortgaged to pay this money that goes to my wife, what happens if I sell the property afterwards? We got to know what happened first. Because if I sell the property first, my wife can come and take the property back from the guy who bought it. Because he bought property with a lien on it, and he didn't do the right title search. So when that happens, that he didn't do the right title search, he's stuck, right? So in order to prevent that, you have to put a date on the ketubah. The second thing in the ketubah is that we say where it is. We say, Kandim in Idinat America Tzfonit. Now you're going to laugh a little when I tell you why we have to have the place. We have to have the place so when the money is stated, you'll know what it's worth in that particular country according to the currency of that country. But ask me a question, where are the United States? And Kesef Tzuri, that's mentioned here, is Syrian tetradrachma. Now what good is it going to do to know the Syrian tetradrachma? So here you see there's a problem. The ketubah for us has become a form, and we don't care about the numbers. And that's where the Ashkenazim, it became formalized. And so it doesn't matter that we're giving the place in order that we can know what the money's worth, but we're giving money that isn't even our money. We'll see that problem in another way, because of the system for dating. So let me point out to you that we have the same problem here. There is a Mishnah which tells us about the ways in which they dated documents, and it's a Mishnah in Gittin. And it says the following, Katab l'shum malchut she'ena hogenet. What if a person will use a kingdom to do the chronology that isn't appropriate? For example, l'shum malchut madai. There is no Median government in the time of the Mishnah, but he's going to use the government of Media, because Media was merged with Persia by Cyrus the Great. L'shum malchut Yavan, for the kingdom of Yavan. That means for them, the Seleucids, who were the Greek rulers, Yavanim Nikpitzu Alai, means the Seleucid Syrians. L'vinyan Abayit, the temple wasn't standing anymore in the time of the Mishnah. L'chorban Abayit, the destruction, it's not a valid way. So these are all not valid. The list in the Mishnah is not valid. Now, actually, in the Tosefta, dealing with the very, very same issue, the Tosefta tells us that they used to do the counting according to the Hipparchin. The Hipparchin is the Roman province, and later also by the consuls. And if you look at all the documents for the Bar Kokhba caves, they all have the Roman consuls. Now, I gave you on the handout the ketubah of this famous woman, Babata. If you go over to page 7, it's very hard to read it because it didn't come out so good, but it's my fault, not their fault. If you look on the top line, the Tlata Ba'adar, it's fragmentary. Al Hupatiyat. See that word? Hey, pay, tet, yud, tap. That's the Greek word for the consulship, because they were going to tell you who the two Roman consuls were in that year. So we date from Briat HaOlam. But until recently, all of the Sephardim dated from what's called Minyan HaShtarot. Now, I want to raise this problem because Minyan HaShtarot starts in 311 BCE. Does anybody know when that is? 311 BCE is the division of the Empire of Alexander. It's too loud, right? It's the division of the Empire of Alexander. Now, in 311 BCE, they started counting what's called the Seleucid era. And if you read the Geret Rav Shmira Gaon, who gives us the dates of all the rabbis, he derived all his dates from a system of Minyan HaShtarot. And in fact, I have this beautiful commentary on the Yemenite edition, Yemenite version of the Haggadah, where the author wants to go back to Minyan HaShtarot, because he says that's our real Minhag. The honest truth is that Minyan HaShtarot is like what they said over here. It's, you know, basically, Malchut She'ena Hogenet. Because what are you doing? There are no Seleucids, right? So, what are you going to do? But that's how we do it. So we use Briat HaOlam, and the Sephardim today use Briat HaOlam, but they used to use, all through the Middle Ages, Minyan HaShtarot. Now back to the page 2. So, Eich Hechatan. What do you mean, Eich? Now some ketubot start, Anan Sa'adeh Eich. We testify. How? So let me explain this. You have to know that a legal document, depending on what its purpose is, can be written in one of two ways. Number one, the speaker is affecting a transaction. That's where the document itself affects the transaction. So in that case, it's first person from the beginning. What we have here is a third person description by the witnesses of what the Chatan said, and later what the Chatan does, and how they made the kinyan with the chatan that returns at the bottom to their speech. So we've started so far third person, the witnesses are speaking. And they're saying, Eich HaChatan did the following. And what did he do? Amar La, he said to this girl the following. So we're about to have a quotation for the chatan. That's what's going on in the text. Now I should point out to you that there is a minority opinion that our ketubah affects the marriage. And that's why some rabbis want the ketubah to be handed to the kala in the presence of the witnesses. Actually, the truth be told, this isn't exactly, this is like a modern chiddush. Because the Mishnah says, Aisha niknet bishlosha drachim. Because for Mishnaic Hebrew, derech is not feminine the way it is in biblical and modern, it's masculine. So they say, Aisha niknet bishlosha drachim. And one of them is bishtar, a contract. That's not this ketubah. In order to marry one with a star, you need a star that says, Harei at mikudeshet li, b'shtar zeh. And that's not what this is. And then, like in a get, the mesira, the handing of that star to the woman in front of the Eidim, is what makes the marriage. Okay, that's not the ketubah. But nonetheless, if the rabbi says to you, especially some of the younger women here, at your wedding, take this in front of the Eidim, don't argue with it. Okay, now, because any kind of thing like this starts to become popular, everybody does it. Okay, so now, Amalala Hadabatulta. So now they are saying, Eich, that this guy said to the woman the following, so and so, but so and so, Havili Intu. Now, Intu does not mean a wife. Ita in Aramaic, or Inta, because the Nun gets assimilated, the Tuf gets a Dagesh. Anybody that followed that, if you didn't. Intu is wifehood. Be for me in the status of wifehood. This exact formula is found in the earliest ketubot that go back to the Jewish military colonists of Elephantine, also known as Yev, and it's in Aswan, and it was buried by the dam. But there is this island where the Jews lived and had a military colony. And they had contracts of marriage. And although most of the contracts are not like ours, this part is. Havili l'intu. be wifehood, in the status of wifehood. And then immediately, what does this nice guy say? He says, you know what I'm going to do for you? Va'ana eflach, I'm going to work. But it means the slave. And halachically, the commentaries point out, it means in order to fulfill his obligations to her, no matter how low he has to go in his occupation, you know, he's an MD, and he has no choice but to clean up in a hospital. Right? That's what he's going to do for a living. He has to do it. Va'okir, I'm going to respect you. Va'ezon, I'm going to provide you food. Va'afarnes, right? Right? I will provide for your clothing. We basically understand that. Yatichi lichi. There's a problem here. It's two direct objects in a row. Yat is the direct object sign in the Aramaic of Eretz Yisrael, and Lamed is the direct object sign in the Aramaic of Bavel. So you got double direct object. You can try to give me something that Yat is direct and the Lamed is indirect. It doesn't going to work. So I'm going to take care of you, kehilchot guvin yudayin, like the laws of the Jewish man, because we already learned before, even though most of this stuff is could be understood as the Rabbanon, the fact is this is the obligation of a Jewish man. The falchin u'mokrin v'zanin v'fardas v'l'sheon, they do this bekushta. Now bekushta means faithfully. Normally, kashot, unviyoi kashot, right, says in Brit Shmei, which is from the Zohar, his prophets are true. But here, I think it means faithfully, in the sense that we would use it in English. Because, you see, otherwise you could sort of jokingly say that it doesn't mean the following. He's obligated afarnes, to buy her clothing. So he goes out and gets a dress and puts a phony label in to make it look like it's more expensive. That's not what it's... That is aser. But that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about just faithfully doing what he's supposed to do. Okay. Now, immediately now, he's now going to make a formal declaration. V'ahivna, that's a present tense, I hereby give you, lichi, to you, mohar betulaichi. Now we're assuming it's a betula. Obviously you all know, when the woman is a virgin, this is a text. We have other texts for divorcee and convert, because they have different amounts of mohar, of the ketubah money. But you should be aware that if you go to a wedding, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a ketubah that you may read a fake ketubah. So if you don't want the public to know the business of the woman is getting married, like, for example, you have a girl who was married for 2 months and she's 23 years old and getting married again. They don't have to, so they don't read that. Right? So anyhow, so Yahid Melech, I give you mohar betulaichi, I give you the ketubah money. That's the mohar. What is that? Now, here's the point. He didn't give her anything, right? He's not giving her anything. I hereby give means I hereby enter an obligation that there will be mortgaged from me to you a payment that I'm not making. And what is that? Ksav zuzei matan, 200 zuz. The zuz is the Roman denarius. They still have in Jordan, you know, dinar. It's once getting something fixed in Israel in a car fixed. And the guy couldn't make change. So the guy says, you'll take dinar? He was joking around, one of the workers, right? He says, you'll take dinar? I said, no, I'm sorry. You can use it, I can't. But anyhow, Ksav zuzei matan is, you know, one of these gas stations, Talpiot, you know, they have all these hundreds of gas stations there. Now comes a very important thing, so let's get out of the joking mode here. Because he says, I'm going to now give this money, the chazi lichi midoraita. What do you mean midoraita from the Torah? We just said before it's the Rabbanan. We said that every Rishon except Rabbeinu Tam says Rabbanan. And actually, if you look in the Gemara, you'll see that there's a machloket inside a machloket. Why? The first machloket is you have the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel arguing. But there's a machloket in the Gemara about which one said which opinion. So we can't go by the idea that we follow the Chachamim as opposed to a minority view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because we don't know which opinion is the Chachamim and which opinion is Rabbi Gamliel. Okay? And we have the same problem. It's in the Bavli and Yerushalmi. And it's confused who said what. But nonetheless, Rabbeinu Tam is the only one that says Minatorah, and the Ketubah says Minatorah. So there are three possible answers. One, the Ketubah believes it's Minatorah. Gamarnu. Two, we're saying it's Minatorah to scare the Baal. We want the husband to know this is really serious stuff. The Torah says you got to do this. It's really the Rabbanan, but we want to scare him. Number three, the Mohar is in the Torah, even though the Gemara says, Mikan Samchu Chachamim, because it's in the Torah for the seduced woman. It's not in the Torah for regular woman. So maybe it refers to that. So these are three possibilities about why we say Doraita. You should know that there are Jewish communities that have either nothing here, or they say the Chazi Lich Midrabanan. And in the case of a widow remarrying, it's always, it says the ketubah say midrabanan. Because it is only midrabanan. Because we don't know this, the shita that a ketubah is minatorah is only for virgins. Okay. So that's what he says. And he further says, right? Your food, your clothing, your needs, he's promising her these things. You know, the Torah says, right, those three things, which are the food, the clothing, and sexual relations. So that's the last one here. Me'al is from the Shorish alal in Aramaic. It means to enter. Me'al levataychi means to have relations with you. Ka'orach kolara. We saw it in the Rambam. Kederach kolara. It's the same thing. According to the way, there's also a line like that in the Dead Sea Scrolls for the very same thing, that if people will take wives, v'holidu banim, and they have children, kederach kolara. Same line. So it means to have relations. Ka'orach kolara. Now that's his declaration to him. Now the witnesses state, not him, the witnesses state that the girl agreed. Utz viat marat so-and-so betul tada. She agrees, vahavat leila into, and wants to be his wife. Now that's very important, because you can't marry a woman in halacha if she doesn't want to marry you, right? They cannot have a forced marriage in halacha. Okay. Now at this point, the text begins to turn to the dunya. Questions at the end? I'm sorry, I have to do that, otherwise we won't finish. Okay, now, at this point, the text turns to the statement about the nedunya. The nedunya is what she brings. In colloquial Yiddishized Hebrew, it's called a nadam. Now, this is what she brings. She can bring two kinds of property into a marriage. We're only talking here about what's called nichsei tzon barzel. That means he has to return it at the same value if the marriage ends, whether by divorce or death. As opposed to the example that I gave my wife in the car this morning, if the wife comes in, she has a pad of paper when she moves in. And then she had it before. She had this pad of paper. We finish up the pad of paper. We throw the cardboard in the garbage pail. The husband doesn't owe the woman in the event of death and divorce to buy a pad of paper for her. He only owes that which is listed in the dunya. If you look at the old ketubot, they list everything. One pot for cooking soup. One dress, one, and then all that stuff is in the dunya, and the husband does have to pay for that. Okay? As opposed to nichsei malug, which is stuff you use up, where she just had some stuff and she brought it, and they got it somehow, it doesn't make any difference. Okay? Her old college textbooks that every husband wishes to get rid of. Okay. V'dein the dunya the hanagat leimi be'avua, and this is the dunya that she brings from the house of her father, bein b'ksaf, bein b'zahav, bein b'tachshitin, whether it is silver, gold, or other types of jewelry, b'manei d'lavusha, whether it's clothing, b'shibushe dira, and the stuff that you need for the house, u'b'shibushe d'arsa, the bed linens, hakol kibel alav, this chatan, so-and-so chatan dinan, has accepted them as being valued at X. In our ketubah, there's no real money. So it says, meya zekukim kesef tzaruf, for 100 pieces of silver. But in the real old-fashioned one, they would actually list, they would say, you know, 1,000 ducats of whatever the place was, so many rubles. Okay. Bitsave this guy, chatan dinan, v'hosif lamin dileg. This is chiyuv. The husband adds tosefet nedunya. The minhag today is to simply double the number. Min dileg from his own money, od meas kukim kesef, or of his own will, another 100 zukukim kesef tsaruf, refined silver, acherun kinegdan, equal to what she's bringing, sachakol matayim zukukim kesef tsaruf, comes to 200. Now there are two different views about this. One view is that if he has to pay out the money, he has to pay the doubled sum. The other view is, no, the doubling of the sum is only because it's a happy occasion, you want to say this guy's giving his wife a lot of stuff. But really, we all know that it's fake. And therefore, if the marriage would end, he's only obligated to pay the one sum, the nedunya sum, not the tosefet nedunya. But there are others who say, wait a minute, they would even write 4 times, 10 times. And in those communities, there was a set minhag in the Beit Din, that if someone had to pay, they knew exactly how much he had to pay. Okay. Sachakol matan eskukim kesef tzaruf, v'chach amar chatan dinan. Again, the Eidim are saying what happened in their presence. This chatan said the following. Now comes the declaration of responsibility and lien on his property. Achrayut shtar ketuv tada. the obligation for this shtar ketuva, which means the obligation that you can take my land away if I do not pay, or land that I sold to anybody else after the date that I entered into this marriage, right? And the dun yedain, v'tosef tadan, the added amount. Kabalit alai, accepted them, alai v'al yartai, batrai, and also on my inheritors after me, lehit param, and kol shvar arag nechasin, to be paid for my best property. V'kinyanin, and other possessions, to eat li techot kol shmai, which I have under the heavens, etc. Now this is very important. Because the whole business about the inheritors is the following. There exists in halacha something called matanat shchiv merah. This is how people avoid the Torah's requirements that the boys get all the money and not the girls. And this is that a person on his deathbed or her deathbed may make instructions for the disposal of their property such that it becomes effective upon death, but it's actually halachically effective now. So what he's promising here is that he will not be able to use that technique to get out of the fact that the ketubah money goes to the wife. He can't turn around and, as they say in Yiddishized Hebrew, yarshin his stuff to some, let's say, son or something like that, to avoid the wife, the widow. He had a fight with her, he's in the hospital on a respirator, but he can still have a fight with his wife. So he says, okay, bring the sons, he tells them, you're getting it with Adam. You can't do that, it won't work. Now, furthermore, the text goes on and it mentions two things. Nichasin v'kinyanin. Why? The original ketubah is only against real property. Because achrayut, nichasim that have achrayut, means it's got to be real property. Not mitaltalin, not movable property. However, in the time of the Gaonim, they found a simple problem. No Jew owned any land. And certainly in the Middle Ages. So how could you have a ketubah? What's going to be mortgaged? So they had to compromise and mortgage the guy's movable property. So that's why it says, the best of my nichasin v'kinyanin, dili techot koshmaya, and also the kanai, which I already bought, v'atidan alev mikneh. They're all mortgaged, even if I buy it later on. Nichasin v'ik lahonach rayut, property that normally can be put under a lien, which means real estate. Udalek lahonach rayut, which means movable property, because it can't be put under a lien normally, but for this purpose it can be. Kulhon yehavun, they will all be achra'in v'arba'in, they will all be mortgaged. Now, the Mishnah uses achra'in v'arba'in in explaining what Shimon ben Shetach, the Tosefta, I'm sorry, did. But some modern commentaries want to read into the ketubah that achra'in is for the land that he owns, and arba'in is for his movable property, in a modern ketubah. It's a nice interpretation. Historically, it doesn't work because they already used it for real property, but okay. Lifroa min home, and they are all mortgaged to pay for this ketubah, da nidani dain, this nidunya that she gives me, that I have to pay back. Vitosef da, and the added amount that I took upon myself as an obligation, minai, from me. Fafilu min glimad al katfai, right, even from the shirt off my back. Now that beautiful expression would be impossible in the time of the Mishnah. Why? Because the shirt off his back is movable property. And it's not mortgaged to the ketubah until the time of the Gaonim. Okay? So it's a beautiful line. It shows you that sometimes history can bring you some beautiful things. Bechayai uvatar chayai, in my life and after my life. Again, I can't make an order, a legal document that's going to cause the thing in the next, after I'm dead, to have a different effect. Min yom adonanu li'olam, from now and forever. V'achrayut v'chomer, now. At this point, there is a tradition in all contracts that they have to repeat at the end the basic ikar of the contract. By the way, just to make something clear, there's more stuff after we finish the document, so if you don't get your coat on when you hit the last line. V'achrayut v'chomer shtar ketuv tada, and this lien, and the specific strict laws of this contract, the dun yedain v'tosef tada, the ketubah amount, plus the dunya and the tesefta, kibel alav, so-and-so, the chatan, is accepted upon himself, kechomer koshin rei ketubot v'tesefta, the nehigin v'vidot Yisrael, in the same way as all the strict laws pertaining to the ketubah, and the all rest of it, the tesefta money, the nehigin v'vidot Yisrael, which the daughters of Israel follow, ha'asuyin ketikun chachamenu, zichronu levrachim, they're done according to the chakanot of the chachamim. Delak asmachta, can't be an asmachta, what is asmachta and what is tofsei dishtari? By the way, I just want to say in general that if you could sit at a wedding year after year after year and you hear the guy say, veloka asmachta, veloka tofsei dishtari, you have no idea what it means. You should have been curious, and you should have get a book somewhere and find out what it means. I don't know. Now, so asmachta is like we have a gambling game, and we all sit down around the table to play poker, but I'm convinced I'm going to win. You win. When you take my money, you're a thief. Because I didn't enter that with dot machne to get you acquire my money. I was convinced I'm winning. That's a big problem in halacha with stocks and all kind of other stuff. We have ways of understanding, but the bottom line is that if the husband enters into the marriage figuring, look, I'm obligated for these three things: the ketubah money, replacing the nedunya she brought, and also for the tosefta. But I know that she's dying first, and I'm going to inherit the money. Then that's an asmachta, because he's betting that she's going to die first. Now I got to admit, right, that if she's 80 and he's 30, like that guy in the news, he's not so crazy. Maybe it's not an asmachta. But for any normal husband and wife getting married, we all know that one can die first. You don't know which one, right? Even worse, I guess you could say, sometimes they both die together in some terrible way. But normally, one dies first. So if you think it's not going to be you, it's asmachta. So he says, I'm not doing an asmachta. I know that I could have to pay this money. Or we'll look at tofsei d'shtari. Tofsei d'shtari is filling out forms. What do? A tofes is the form you make up, like the printed one you buy. So I'm not a guy making up one of those forms that's in the store you can come and buy. I'm really entering into agreement, right? To look at tofsei d'shtari. And then the Adim say the kanina. We made the kinyan. The kinyan is a kinyan chalifin, which is called in yeshiva shchlipin, which is the exchange of a handkerchief. The minag of most is not to have the kala do it, only the chatan, although some have the minag of having the kala do it. In which fact, we could be interesting to take a vote here of how many of the married ladies got the handkerchief, or whatever they used, at their own wedding to do a kinyan in front of the Edim to accept the conditions of the ketubah, right? Anybody that did that? No, where the woman did it. There's one person who's not raising her hand, who should have raised her hand. Shows you how no one remembers. So, okay, but it's a minhag of certain chassidim and others that the woman also makes a kinyan. You might have forgotten also. So, in any case, right, they state, we made the kinyan from this chatan, in which he obligates himself to the kala to follow what's written in this text. Okay? Chatan denan tu marat so-and-so betul tada. Marat, you realize, means miss or misses, right? This virgin, I'll call him out of the kata before he's obligated with this kinyan that he made, is to obligate him on every single thing that says above. And then, b'mana the kasha l'mikneve. He only did it with something which is kosher to do it. For example, you can't do it with food. It has to be a fixed object. So let's say that they're looking around and no one has a handkerchief, which is the tradition to do it, because it's called kinyan sudar, because they used to use this thing that they wound around the head, the turban. They used to use that kind of long scarf. So instead they look for a handkerchief. No one has one. Someone says, take a piece of cake. Can't do it. No fruit, no cake, nothing like that. We did it with a kosher vessel. Vakol sharir v'kayam. Everything is valid and established. Why do we have to have that at the end of the ketubah? Every Jewish document has to have a line like that, because we're in fear that someone will add material to the bottom of the contract before the names of the Edim. The signatures of the Edim, as you see in the example here, should be right on the next line. No space in between. And you write a kol v'sharir v'kayam, which really should be written at the end of the line, so there isn't even any line left, so that no one can mess around with the contract, okay? That's the rule. Now, you should have noticed that in the document we just read, there's stuff missing. All the Tanaei Beit Din that we said are obligatory, whether or not they're written or not. Remember, on the back page, we read this in the Rambam, and in Halacha Hey, he said, even if you don't write it, it's obligated. So we have also these ketubot from the Cairo Geniza that follow the Eretz Yisrael system. They write all the Tanaei Beit Din. Now, from the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt, from the people who ran away, we have this beautiful ketubah on page 7, the fragmentary text of Bavta's ketubah. So, and you have the translation on the next page. And I want to read through some of this with you to show you how they used to list all the Tanaei Beit Din in the ketubah, unlike ours. So first of all, the text starts, if we just go over to line 4, go down to line 4, you'll learn that she came from Ein Gedi. We know that because we have all of her legal records. Now here it says the following. He says to her, to Tehaveinli, or Havili, we're not sure, into, and Kedin Moshe Yehudai, like the laws of Moshe and the Jews. Vizananalach, I will take care of you, giving you food. Umichsach, and your clothing. I'm on line 5. V'yahev nalach, and I hereby give you b'moharach u'b'chtuvatach, as your mohar and ketubah, right? Alai k'saf zuzin, and v'kim alai, in line 6, I take it upon myself as an obligation, k'saf zuzin, arba mea, 400 zuzin, ma'in and surin, which are 100 in the Tyrian, ma'di titzvei l'meisav, because you want to marry and to become married, min parna, from parna is a word for its ferne in Greek, and it is a word for the nedunya, okay, for dowry. And then there's a list of how he's going to give you imdain or imdin, according to the law of your lachmach, your food, uksutach, and your clothing, ufarshach, whatever that is. Mazon ita, it's very nice, line 8. Mazon inta birat chorin, the food which is appropriate for a free Jewish woman. I don't know what that is, but okay. And then there's some d Shom Kesef, which comes out in money as certain Arba Meyazuzah, 400 Zuzin, and there's more stuff like that. In line 10, in the middle, the Imtishtabai, if you get captured, Afrikinach, I will redeem you min Beiti, for my money, min Nichasai, for my property. Va'ativneich li, and I will bring you back as my wife. What does that mean? Even if she was raped. He has to bring her back, unless it's a Kohen. If he's a Kohen, she goes free. When a Kohen wrote a ketubah, according to the system, he used to write, I'll bring you back to your parents and your family. Because not allowed to have relations with her if she's raped, even if she didn't agree to do it, right? Whereas with a regular wife, you can't say, she was raped, therefore get rid of her. You're not allowed to. Okay. Then it continues going back on the bottom, in line 13, it's all fragmentary, broken text. Binanduk ban, the girl daughters, or female, whatever you want to say, female daughters, right? Teheve yadva umitzanan, they will be able to live and be supported, min beiti, from my house, and min nichasai, from my family, adzvan diit nasvan lebalin, until they get married. That means that she has a guarantee that he will support them if he dies. They are supported out of his inheritance. By the way, you know what the Mishnah says about this. If there's insufficient money, the girls get it all for this support. And the boys, right, should go around begging. Right? That's what it says. Should beg. Okay. Now, then it goes on. And it says, V'im ana ahach l'beit omi, in 15. If I go to my eternal home, kadamach, before you, this is the husband speaking. Tevein yatva umitzanan, you should be able to dwell and be supported min beiti, from my household, min nechasai, from my property, atzmandi yitzvun yartai, until the time when my inheritors want l'mintan lach kesaf ketuvteich, to pay you back the money, the ketubah, right? And then furthermore, so that's these, you see what you see here? You have the conditions of benan, right, nukban. You have the condition, right, which we mentioned before, of benin dichrin, of the boys, that they inherit the ketubah of their mother, even though the ketubah goes from the mother to the father, if he's still alive. When he dies, it does not go to anyone else into the general pot. It goes only to the sons of the woman who was the mother of those children, not to the children of somebody else, right? And you have here the business of freeing her from captivity. If we had the whole text, it probably would have all the conditions that the Rambam got out of the Mishnah and which he listed there. And then they have this nice little thing at the end, which is in all ancient contracts, which is that he says the following. He says, "Ubechol zman," the end of line 16, "di temarli achalef lan shtara zdina," right, "kidi chazah." As is appropriate, anytime you tell me, I will give you a replacement. In other words, if she comes along and says the document was lost, or the document, something else happened, he'll give a replacement ketubah. There is something in halacha called ketubah de irkasa. I saw them twice. Once I was in the house of a distinguished rabbi, the distinguished rabbi's son, and I saw he had a ketubah on the wall, beautiful ketubah with no signatures. I said, what are you doing? You have no signature. He said, no, they wore out. I said, what are you talking about? You have to have a ketubah. The halacha is you can't live for one day without a ketubah. He said, oh, went upstairs, and he brought down the ketubah de irkasa, the ketubah that was lost. And it says, we the Beit Din, right, so-and-so came before us, and they told us that they were married on such a date, and they'll go to us. Okay. Some years later, I'm in the home of a friend, and they've put on the wall documents of the family. He says, yo, we have our great grandmother's ketubah or something. I start reading, I said, this isn't a ketubah, it's ketubah the Irkasah. Same thing. These documents existed, they still are made out today. So he says, if you lose it, I agree to make you another one. Now, what's interesting, by the way, is they also didn't have that, divorce documents. And just to see how these phrases are all the same, if you look down in line 17, you see, he says, V'chol nichsin di'itai li, any property I have, v'di aknei, or that I will acquire, achra'in v'aravin, they're all pledged, l'chtuvteich, to your pay your ketubah. Right? Then he gives his name, by the way, we know the name, that the husband of Babatel was Yehuda Bar Elazar Kethuzion. Now, let me tell you the interesting thing about Yehuda Bar Elazar Kethuzion, and then we'll conclude and take some questions. Yehuda Bar Elazar had a daughter from another marriage. In fact, Babata lent money, this is unbelievable, to Yehuda. I mean, it's unbelievable from what we think of polygamous marriage. He lent, his first wife, Babata, he borrowed money from Babata to provide the dowry for his daughter, Shlom Tzion, who had a different mother. But if you think about it, why not? So, in any case, I want to tell you, we actually have a Greek ketubah that was written for Shlom Tzion, which says it was written in accordance with Greek custom. Now, you have to be aware that the Roman Empire used Greek in the East. Okay? Unlike the Latin in the Passion movie. But anyhow, all this, that movie had all Latin dialogue. So, anyway, it used Greek. Now, there is a big debate about the document I'm talking about. Because, right, in this document, what happens is amazing. He claims that he received a dowry of 200 zuz in the document from the wife, Shlom Tzion. So some scholars said, this document, by the way, was April 5th, 128 CE. I'll tell you what we know, because it's written like a Roman document. Anyhow, according to this document, he received a dowry from her. So all kinds of scholars jumped up and down and said, you see, these people are assimilated. Instead of the Jewish system, where is the dowry really comes from the husband, here we have the Greek system that the dowry comes from the wife. Well, first of all, this is baloney. Because as we just saw, in the Jewish system, the man's mohar is a promise. It's not paid. It's only to be paid at the end time of death or divorce. Furthermore, in the Jewish system, the woman does bring in the real nedunya. Okay. But they jumped up and down and said whatever they said. Let me tell you what this document is. Supposing I want to create a document that will stand up in a Roman court. And in case I want to collect the ketubah from my husband because of the fact that he owes it to me, what do? I make him sign a document that says that I gave it to him. If I have a document that says I gave him 200 zuz, he has to return it to me at the end of the marriage, according to the Greek custom. So in other words, you had people using the legal system of the Greek system, which expects that the woman is going to pay the man, to create a document that says the woman paid the man, which she did not, so that he will be obligated to pay her, according to Jewish law. So the idea of using secular courts and all that, this is not new. They were doing it then. So, in concluding and opening up for questions, I want to just remind you there, therefore, what we have in this document is basically the Edim describing what happened, and the description tells of a whole bunch of things which are exchanged between the two. That in actuality the document is mutual because she's bringing something and he's obligating something in return. That these obligations which are specified include not only the ones that are written, but the full group of 10 that the man is obligated and 4 that the woman is obligated to, according to the counting of the Rambam based on the Mishnayot. And that in the end, all of these obligations are specified in the ketubah. And therefore, the final point I want to make is that it's a habit of Judaism to describe various things which are either relational, emotional, or even, you might say, ethical in legal terms. And that's what you have in the ketubah. Now, in the beginning of the Gemara in Kiddushin, there is a whole big piece which is what we call an addition from the Savo Ra'im, the latest layer in the Gemara. Right at the end, after the Gemara was basically edited, and we know the Ritva quotes Rav Yehudai Gaon as saying that this is an addition. The other famous addition is the beginning of Psachim, where the Mishnah says, Or l'arbasar, they don't know what the word or means. In the end, they're going to conclude that it means orta, evening. It takes several pages to conclude that, and that's why we do Bedikat Chametz at night. Otherwise, if or meant something else, right? It says, Olar Basar Bukinat Chametz. In any case, in the beginning of Kedushin, they discuss Aishanik Nate. And much of the purpose, after discussing the masculine and feminine issue over Derech, is it Shloshah or Shalosh? After discussing that at some length, this addition to the Gemara goes on to discuss what is really the nature of the kinyan of the husband, what's really happening here. And the whole point of it is that we're talking about a mutual relationship, and to dispel the notion that marriage is a one-way street and that it's just a bunch of legal acts. And I think when you read the ketubah properly, you understand that there is the man's part, what he pledges, the woman's part that she pledges, plus the design of the rabbis to use the ketubah as a means, and this is what Shimon ben Shetach was after, of protecting the woman from being left with various problems. And you see that the special clauses regarding her support after his death, and all the rest of these things, and the inheritance passing to children, all of these things are designed to ensure that the legal basis will provide a kind of emotional, spiritual, and ethical basis for the marriage to come. So thank you very much. We'll open up the questions.